From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 30th day of June 2010. It's USDA Report Day. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the agricultural futures markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Daryl Good should be in studio with us to take up the numbers from the USDA reports this morning. And then in the second half of our program, we'll open the phone lines up, I think, to take phone calls from you to Daryl and Joe Persaki from USDA NAS. That's the National Agricultural Statistics Services. They put together that report for the acreage figures today. And along the way, we'll also hear about the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons in Delphi, Indiana, right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
On this Wednesday afternoon, futures in Chicago finish like this. The nearby July wheat at $4.64¾, up 22¾. September at $4.80¼, 23¼ higher. And December wheat at $5.06½, up 21¼. Hard red winter July at $4.86, up 17¾. July corn futures $3.54¼, 29¼ cents higher. September at $3.62¾, up 29½ cents. December 373½, up 29½, and the March corn at 386½, up 29 cents. May contract today at $3.94¾, up 27¾ of a cent. July soybean futures 948½, up a penny and a quarter. August down a half at 931. September $9.12, down 7 cents. And November beans at 902½, down 9½. The January of 2011 contract finished the day at 9.12¼, down 9¾ on the afternoon. July bean meal futures for the day finished like this. Nearby contract, 289.40, that's down 40. July oil at 36.28, 35 cents higher. Live cattle futures, June contract, 91.25, up 57½. August feeders at 113 and a nickel, 17½ cents higher. And July lean hogs at $79.22½. Up 47½ cents. You are listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. August crude oil futures, $75.66 a barrel, down 28 cents. Ethanol at $1.52¾, 6 tenths of a cent higher, rather 6 cents higher. Natural gas at $4.61¼, up 7 1/10 of a cent, and the heating oil or diesel fuel, 3 9/10 of a cent lower at $1.98¼. Gold contract July futures $1,245.50, a settlement price up $3.50 an ounce, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average now at 98.80, just about 11 points higher. U.S. dollar at 86.01 is down 0.02. on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like. Comes from Drew Lerner. He says dry weather will prevail in the western Corn Belt, that into Saturday and into the eastern areas through Sunday. Thunderstorms then will develop afterwards, with the remnants of Hurricane Alex contributing some moisture for locally heavy rainfall, especially in the western Midwest. Rain should prove favorable, says Mr. Lerner, for the Midwest and help replenish topsoil moisture in some areas, leaving subsoil moisture adequate to abundant for support of corn pollination a little later in July. The future forecast model runs may reduce some of the predicted Midwest rainfall for this weekend and early next week. That's just a cautionary note. Temperatures will be trending a bit warmer after day. Highs back into the 80s and the low 90s this weekend and Friday. But today and Thursday, we'll still be in the 70s and the 80s. Should be absolutely beautiful weather today and tomorrow. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the hour, and we will actually talk with Drew Lerner. He, of course, is in Kansas City at World Weather.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
This is Illinois Public Media. It's a Wednesday afternoon, time to check the agricultural futures markets. On the phone line with us is Paul Cooley. He's at ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Paul.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Let me go through some numbers very quickly, and then we'll get into the futures markets. USDA, of course, releasing a couple of reports this morning. They updated the acreage figure. They now say corn acres at 87.872 million acres. That compares to the USDA Prospective Planning's report at 88.8. Soybeans at 78.868 is up from the 78.1 that was released in March. And the quarterly grain stocks report, or what is on hand as of June the 1st, 4.3 billion for corn and soybeans at 571 million. What'd you make of those numbers at first blush this morning?
Well, it was a great surprise to the marketplace. You know, just for example, the corn acreage was less, million acres from their March intentions, and maybe 1.3 million if you look at the average trade guess. The soybean acreage was pretty much in line, and of course the real surprise was the 288 million bushel smaller stocks report and the smaller bean number. You know, the first thing that we go into is say, what's this mean to this supply demand report? And you know, it probably conservatively means 1350 carryover on old corn and a 1-1 carryover on next year's corn based on yield projections. What's the surprise? Well, it was in the feed and residual. One idea that the livestock numbers really don't encourage a lot of extra feed usage, so wet corn damage, test weight, maybe grain stored at new ethanol plants that are going to go into production or waiting for production, grain stored somewhere. But it was an interesting report, and we did see a violent reaction today in today's trading. I guess the big surprise, in my opinion, was how weak the soybean market was. And the idea here is that maybe there's going to be some preventive planting, there's going to be some less acreage, and that's going to be an interesting deal, just when and where the government will adjust those numbers, and probably not until October, unfortunately.
Did it bother you on just a day trade side of things?
I can't hear you, Todd.
Did it bother you on the day trade side of things that the corn didn't lock the limit up at the end of the day?
No, I thought that was a sign of still some tremendous strength, and two reasons. You know, this is the tax bill seasons on land payment. The American farmer stuck with a ton of old crop corn. There was a lot of it moved probably during the day. And, of course, this market is risk aversion, you know, with the stock market in the doldrums. Historically, with this kind of a carryover and with just a little bit of weather flare, you could see some $4 new December corn. But the market is very sluggish, so no, it doesn't bother me at all to see corn close up 29.5. I think that was pretty good.
And tell me about this 1.35 and the 1.1 that you came out with for the ending stocks. What are you using in terms of average yield for the nation then?
163.5.
163.5.
So yeah, that's just what the government said in the March planting intentions report. So, you know, it's a very snug carryover for next year. You know, there's still a lot of debate about, you know, crop rating, so to speak, and also demand. What kind of an ethanol policy will the government come forth with? So those are things that are still unknown to the marketplace. So it does give time for the farmer that still has a very large inventory of old crop corn to think a few days and not only study the weather but also study the outside markets.
Well, what should he be thinking?
At least we don't. I don't think we're going to see a 3 at harvest time now, and I think that we're going to see, for example, a $3.50 to $4 trading range on the December futures. That's what I think there. As far as the bean is concerned, you know, something like $8.75 to $9.50 is probably my early guess as far as a trading market today.
Anything else to add before I let you go?
Have a profitable day.
You too. Thanks so much. That's Paul Cooley. He's with ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Joins us here in the Closing Market Report. That happens each and every Wednesday afternoon.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Tom Testel and Morris at 815-941-2184. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Hey, remember, if you'd like to hear what Paul Cooley had to say, you can always do that again online at our website. The address is willag.org. The USDA numbers are all posted there, too. Just scroll down to the middle of the page, and you can look for the Closing Market Report, hear what Paul had to say again, or any of this program. And the reports are under their own little USDA tab. You'll find all the numbers at willag.org. In studio with us this afternoon to take up the report, both the quarterly grain stocks and the acreage report, Daryl Good, ag economist from the University of Illinois. Thanks, Daryl, for making your way north from Mumford Hall.
My pleasure, Todd. Good to be here.
I'll ask you the same thing. Once you saw that report come out this morning, it was a bit of a surprise. What was your first blush reaction?
Well, I wasn't quite as surprised by the acreage report, perhaps, on corn that some were. I think people were kind of lulled into thinking that an early planting of the corn crop meant more acres got planted than intended. But I think we tend to forget that the tail end of the corn planting season really got delayed. And there was about 10% of the crop nationally that actually got planted after May 20th this year. So it wasn't always all early planted. And at the same time, we did see a very sharp rally in soybean prices right in the last half of April, which I think kept a lot of interest in planting soybeans. So acreage being down a little bit from March intentions is not a complete surprise, but certainly the stocks report on corn, I think, is the one that really has to be categorized as a surprise. Stocks much lower than one would have guessed based on known use, and if we were using corn at the rate projected by the USDA in those categories that we don't have actual figures on yet.
So stocks at 4.31, what does that tell you about the ending stocks for the year and for next year?
Well, I'm not sure it tells us a whole lot at this point. I think there is a knee-jerk reaction to say smaller than expected June 1 stocks means that we will have to lower the projection of year-ending stocks, and that if we were 250 million bushels smaller on June 1 than we thought we should have been, then we should take 250 million off of the projection of year-ending stocks. I would question about doing that kind of projection right at this point because quarterly numbers can be a little bit deceiving. I think we can back up to both the December and the March stock numbers that we saw on soybeans this year, particularly the March inventory of soybeans. The market's knee-jerk reaction is bigger than expected March 1 inventories. We're going to have to see much bigger year-ending stocks. That clearly didn't happen, and now we're talking about even smaller year-ending stocks of soybeans. So a lot can happen when we see the September 1 stocks number, just like we saw on wheat this year. The actual year-ending inventory on wheat was more than 40 million bushels larger than the USDA projection. So at the surface, it says that either the crop was slightly overestimated or that somehow we're just feeding tremendous amounts of stuff here during the spring quarter, or that we're going to find some corn in the September stocks number.
Is that not one of the things you suggested was a possibility earlier in the year, that if there was actually a seasonal trend, that you could see it in past times?
Right. There is a very definite seasonal trend in feed use of corn, but the number that we calculate for third quarter disappearance this year is really out of the ballpark. It would be a record feed consumption for corn in the face of a huge increase in distillers' grains that were being fed and smaller livestock numbers. So on the surface, the quarterly number taken by itself doesn't make a lot of sense. And so you have to put everything in context of cumulative use and then keep open the possibility that there will be some adjustment in the fourth quarter.
And the expectation then would be adjustment would be down?
That the September 1 stocks number would be larger than—
Usage would be down.
And actually usage would be smaller than one would calculate for the quarter. But again, you know, the quarterly distribution is a bit of an arbitrary distribution. We get sampling errors in all of these reports. And so that there is, when we try to calculate so-called feed and residual use on a quarterly basis, there is a fair amount of what I call noise in those numbers. So trying to compare across years, I think, can be a little bit dangerous.
Anything odd in the quarterly stocks for the soybeans at 571?
I wouldn't say odd, but they're smaller than one would have calculated. We know what the quarterly crush was. We have a real good handle on what quarterly exports were. So it does say that the residual disappearance on soybeans was also on the high side during the third quarter of the marketing year. And the reasons for that would be very different than what's being hypothesized about the corn number. And again, it may point to a slight overestimate of the 2009 crops.
And I took some liberty and I went back and pulled a story from January with you where you were discussing the Chinese import of soybeans and making a suggestion at that point that we should wait and see that might fall off fairly quickly, but that too could be a seasonal return and that it might return in the fall as a seasonal buying spree. Do you have hopes that that'll happen?
No, I think it will. I mean, there's a very strong seasonal pattern to U.S. soybean exports to all destinations because of the availability of South American supplies beginning about April of each year. So we see that pattern unfold year after year that we experience very good exports from November, December following harvest through about March of the following year. And then that period, April through October or so, we lose market share to South America. So we would expect that we will once again pick up that market share beginning late fall into the winter months, and that seasonal pattern would repeat itself.
Okay, now let's come back to the corn, but talk about total acreage and the corn number of 87.87. You did some calculations on total acreage, crop acres in the United States.
We did a couple calculations. One is, there's always this question when we look at the March intentions, does that report account for all the acres or will we find some additional acres in the June report? This year, the intentions numbers match up very closely with what the June acreage report indicates for total planted acres of all crops. We're within about 250,000 acres on the two reports, on a base approaching 260 million acres. The other calculation I did was just to look not only at corn and soybeans, but to look at feed grains and oil seeds. And while corn acres are up from last year, acreage of all other feed grains are down, particularly for sorghum. So our total feed grain acres are about the same as we had last year. I think that adds a little bit to the bullishness of the corn acreage number coming in smaller than expected. Conversely, oilseed acreage is about 2.4 million acres more than was planted last year. We saw a big jump in canola acres, not only from last year but from March intentions. Sunflower acreage is up, cotton acreage, peanut acreage. So I think that adds a little bit to the bearishness of the soybean acreage number as well.
Anything else that you saw that we ought to discuss?
I think those are the highlights, Todd.
All right, and you'll stick around so we can take some phone calls and talk to Joe Persaki?
That would be great.
All right, now that is Darryl Good, ag economist from the University of Illinois, joining us here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Support comes from Stewart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at www.stewart-peterson.com.
This is the Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. Time to check the cash grain market. On the phone line with us from the Delphi, Indiana location, that's called the Climbers for the Andersons, is Matt Blaisdell. Good afternoon to you, Matt.
Good afternoon.
Thanks for being with us today.
No problem.
Well, what did farmers tell you when they called up today?
You know, I think, honestly, and some of this was we were preparing guys, we were thinking of a more of a neutral to a bearish tone of this report. So I think they're a little shocked and gave them an opportunity to lighten their load as far as their long position. Not as much as selling new bushels, more selling DP and basis contracts today, but they at least got a lot of that old corn cleaned up on this rally.
Right thing to do.
You know, I think so. There's a lot of bases here moved in the last 30 days. With us getting close to the highs that we've made in the last 30 days, it just seems to be the smart thing to lighten your load. Most guys still have you know, anywhere from 10 to 30% of the corn in the bin, still in the bin in our area. So they still got bullets in the gun to play with.
Do you think that bases will tighten up now as we move forward as opposed to what probably looked like it was going to loosen up?
You know, I do. I think nearby it does look like that. And then I think, depending on what this mark does, I think you start to see another basis strength here once you get through the first 2 to 3 weeks of July and August.
There are two things, I suppose, to think about on the corn acreage figure. It was down fairly sharply from the 88.8 that USDA put out in March to 87.8, but still, it's 2% bigger than last year, and the harvested acreage is up 1.4 million or something like that from last year. How do you view those numbers when you try to put them in context with what will be left in the bin?
You know, I think here locally, we you know, we're still going to debate those numbers here, but you know, I think we're probably in line with that. With what we see in the bin here, we actually see stocks in our general area in the 6-7 counties, and the guys we talk to here, their stocks are probably anywhere up from 10 to 15% from July 1 last year to July 1 this year. So in our area, we do still have quite a bit of corn on the farm that still needs to be moved between now and harvest, because every day more these guys are feeling better and better about their crops. I mean, we have some drowned out spots and everything else that everybody has to deal with, but for the most part, the corn is pretty decent here, and with the weather in the next 10 days not being bearish this crop, we're going to pollinate at least half the crop under pretty ideal conditions.
And a final word from you about soybeans and basis, and then your numbers, please.
Yeah. Bean basis here continue to strengthen. Hearing from the just the board crust on for bean margins are still pretty excellent here. I think bean basis is going to continue to be strong here. And my numbers here at Climbers, cash corn at Climbers is 356. Delphi beans for July are at 953.
Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
And that is Matt Blaisdell. He's with the Andersons Climbers facility in Delphi, Indiana. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Wednesday afternoon. When we come back, we'll talk with Drew Lerner, World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City, about the agricultural weather forecast. And then we'll take your phone calls to Daryl Good and Joe Persaki during the Farming World. If you can stay with us, that'd be great. If not, you can always hear that online at willag.org.
This is Illinois Public Media Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey. Monsanto today says its fiscal third quarter net income dropped 45% on declining herbicide sales. Monsanto says cheaper generic versions of its Roundup herbicide continued to eat into its results. The St. Louis company said its net income dropped to $384 million, or 70 cents a share, in the quarter ending May 31st. That's down from $694 million, or $1.25 a share, a year ago. Monsanto says revenue fell to $2.96 billion from $3.16 billion a year ago. Canada's economy unexpectedly stalled in April on a slide in retail sales. Statistics Canada today says real gross domestic product stayed flat in the month after seven straight months of expansion. Consumers bought fewer new cars and clothing in April, sending sales in the retail sector down by 1.7%. Ford Motor Company says it's making another $4 billion payment on its huge debt. The company says the actions will reduce its debt to around $27 billion. The automaker borrowed more than $23 billion to avoid bankruptcy and make it through the recession. And a broad coalition of U.S. business groups today urged senators not to approve a bill that would allow the United States to use import duties against China's exchange rate policy. And that's a look at today's business news.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Wednesday afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. On the phone line with us, Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated. Thanks for being with us, Drew. Tell me about this beautiful weather forecast.
Well, it certainly looks like it'll stay pretty favorable for a little while here. Dry weather through Sunday for a big part of the eastern Midwest. I don't think there's any real reason at the moment to worry about much of anything. I know there's some concern about, well, are we going into that big bad drought pattern that some people want us to have? And the answer to that is absolutely not. Some of the remnants of Hurricane Alex will eventually work its way in a big loop coming back at us from the western part of the country. That hurricane, of course, will be moving into northeast Mexico over the next couple of days. It will end up, its remnants will at least get entrained into a monsoon flow, which brings the moisture up through New Mexico and parts of West Texas during the weekend, and will then join a cool front that will be marching from west to east across the plains and into the Midwest. So eventually we will see some of the influence of Alex on our weather with an increase in shower and thunderstorm activity. And again, this will probably be late in the weekend for the western Corn Belt and in the early part of next week for areas east of the Mississippi River. It's not going to be a big heavy soaking, but it'll be just exactly what the doctor ordered as far as replenishing the topsoil moisture after this multi-day period of drying. And I think the stage will be set for us to cruise right on through the rest of pollination without any real serious problems for a big part of our corn crop.
If you look out further, do you see problems on the horizon for the soybean crop at all?
I am still concerned about the soybean crop, not necessarily because there's something imminent out there, but with the La Nina kicking in and having a fairly good chance of establishing itself in a moderately strong fashion by the end of the summer, I think we'll probably run a little low on moisture across the part of the Midwest. We should see a little more ridginess around in late August and September. So some of those beans that are still in the filling stage may run a little low on moisture, may get a little stressed. I may see yields come down a little bit, but I certainly don't want to, at this point in time, suggest that there's going to be any kind of major problem. We need to just see how well we do in July. If July turns out to be favorably moist and we still have abundant subsoil moisture, it's really not going to matter a whole lot how dry we get the topsoil in August into early September. So at the moment, you know, we're keeping an eye on that soybean crop, but I'm not going to get real excited about it until we get a little deeper down the road.
Your view of how northeastern China, the corn-growing regions, are doing?
Well, you know, they ran out on a little shortage there of moisture for a while, stressed the crop a little bit, but actually I think it helped to develop deeper root systems, and the crop is probably poised in a better way now to handle the dry weather if it comes back a little later in the summer. We are going to see about 10 days worth of frequent shower and thunderstorm activity across all of the old drier areas in China, and so the end result should be a pretty favorable environment for those crops to respond with some aggressive development over the next few weeks. It is going to be a little on the milder side relative to normal for a while we have all the moisture around. But I think in general, the crops there will do a lot better than what many of us thought would be the case as we go into July.
That's Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated. You heard him this afternoon on Illinois Public Media's Closing Market Report. Stay with us if you can for the farming world, and we'll talk with Daryl Good and Joe Persaki about this morning's USDA crop production and quarterly grain stocks reports.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, in Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
This is the Farming World News and Information from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason. In studio with us today, Daryl Good, ag economist from the University of Illinois. On the phone line, Joe Persaki of NASS, that's the National Agricultural Statistics Service in Washington, D.C., to discuss the United States Department of Agriculture acreage and quarterly grain stocks reports. Mr. Persaki, thanks for staying up today for us. I know you were busy in lockup last night.
It sure was. Took a little bit of nap, and I'm ready for you now.
Okay, so I must ask, that was probably a pretty big surprise before they when you first released it to the Secretary of Agriculture. Once those numbers came out, what were the first questions that came from the reporters this morning?
Well, there was several of them said we had phone calls in to both our field offices and the HQ, and it was like, is that correct? Are you missing anything? There was people stunned, unbelief, disbelief, and such. So a lot of phone calls this morning, new emails, a lot of phone calls.
And what were you missing?
I don't think we're missing anything. You know, people, it's really interesting. You know, farmers around the country, they'll say, well, Joe, every time a report comes out, corn prices go down. I said, well, what happened today?
So this is the one you're going to count on from now on? Is that
well,
right?
I don't know about that.
Oh, okay.
But this is just, it is what it is.
It is what it is. So how did you come up? Let's start with the acreage figures. Prospective plantings, of course, which was just a counting of what farmers told you at 88.8. Were you surprised at the 87.8?
Well, I don't know if the word surprised. It's like, okay, you take the data. You know, we did two surveys. We had about 70 some thousand, almost 72,000 farmer operators. We send questionnaires to, mail, telephone, and field interview, and then we also had another 11,500 of these 1 mile square piece of land across the United States that we visited. And, I mean, this is what we counted. And it's like people say, well, how can that be? It's like, well, you look at it, there's two ways you can look at it. One, when we look at that area survey, I mean, we get something called year-to-year, a matched ratio on about 80% of those pieces of land. It showed the same thing as what we call the direct expansion. It looks like maybe the weather, weather was good, but that was early on, and then it kind of tapered off a little bit.
Okay.
Weather-wise, and so maybe there was some switching to corn and beans. That's what people, kind of been speculating, and that's what we saw in our data.
Okay, so and where did you see that? I've got the numbers in front of me that you sent out and you showed to the secretary. So we have 600,000 more acres of corn in Illinois, 400,000 more in Indiana, 250,000 more in Ohio, 300,000 more in Missouri. People are starting to wonder how we got fewer acres at this point. Down 400,000, right, in Iowa,
yep.
down 100,000 in Minnesota. Nebraska down, 350,000?
And Nebraska's
right?
down 350
And
on
Kansas
corn.
Was, too.
And in South Dakota's was, down 350
right.
as well.
Sorry.
I mean, so South Dakota's had some weather problems up there. We knew that as such. So we saw the acres down on that. And then, you flip the other side on beans. I mean, if you go on the other side, we saw the acres, going up in some of those states as well. If you look like to I would say the western and northern, part of the Corn Belt, where Iowa's up 600,000 on, on beans. Minnesota's up 300,000 from last year. Nebraska record high on soybeans, up 600,000. Kansas up, record high 4.1 million acres. So, I mean, a lot of beans. It's a record high on beans, both on planted and what we expect to harvest. So,
and I do need to make note that, and you did, that those numbers are as comparison to last year, not to the March perspective.
Yeah, not to March, right. Yeah, because March was just, that's what people were thinking before a planter hit the ground. So, and this is now, as of when our survey was conducted the first 2 weeks of June.
You think you got all the acres accounted for?
Well, if you look at the principal crop acres, the total acres of land, across the U.S., I mean, we're just down just a smidge, down 400,000 acres from last year. We're looking at 318 million, almost 319 million acres of principal crops. So, I mean, you know, all the acres are there. I mean, you know, and if you think about it, and I was telling somebody earlier today, if you think about it, with the big drop in winter wheat acres, you know, across like the, you know, like say Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, the eastern Corn Belt, you know, and south where you have a lot of double crop beans, if you take that wheat mix out of it, you almost have more acres of corn and beans tossed in there because you don't have that double crop counting of wheat and beans in those double crop states.
And then if you could follow up, let's turn the attention the other way and go to the quarterly grain stocks report.
Mm-hmm.
That number showed some interesting things in the corn. Can you kind of explain what the numbers look like as they came into you?
Yeah, okay. It was kind of interesting because on that survey we have two parts. You know, one part is what we call the off-farm grain stocks, which is, you know, any place that would have corn stored, you know, not a farmer. You know, it could be, you know, feed mills, ethanol plants, grain elevators, terminal facilities. And it was really interesting. We had a couple contacts or whatever this morning. They said, well, are you guys not counting the ethanol plants? It's like, no, yeah, we're counting the ethanol plants if they've got grain in storage. So we've got that part. And then that 72,000 farmers we contacted on the, you know, the acreage side, we also asked them how much, you know, the principal indicators, how much corn do you have stored on your farm? And it wasn't there. I mean, we showed record high disappearance for this quarter. You know, people have been talking about, oh, grain quality and such. You know, one thing we're surmising and we're hearing is that, you know, people are moving this crop off their farm. You know, I was talking to a farmer there up in kind of northwest Iowa, you know, and you just call, you know, he calls every once in a while, just tell me, you know, his personal situation. I don't know the guy, but he calls every once in a while. And he was hauling grain. That's what they've been doing all week. So, I mean, people are moving grain.
Okay, so Joe, we're going to start taking phone calls now. Daryl Good's in studio. He's
okay,
got a question for you, but let me give the numbers out real quick. If you have a question for Joe or for Daryl, either one, you can give us a call. Here's the number. It's 217-333-9455. That's 217-333-9455. Dial in your question now if you have one for Daryl or for Joe.
Joe, just a quick question on the acreage number. At the end of your survey period, it would appear that some acres were not yet planted, and there is some talk of prevented planting in the really wet areas. In your normal crop production estimating process, when would you pick up any of that information about either a shift in acres or some unplanted acres?
Right. Okay, when we were out in June, that first part of June, you know, it started like right at the end of May, like the 27th, 28th of May, and it ran through about the 15th of June-ish, like that. We did ask on the area side, because we can see it when we're out there visiting, you know, how much corn was left to be planted. And this year it was, you know, 1%-ish. It was very tiny this year compared to, you know, the last couple years we had some planting issues going on. So it was very small left to be planted. The farmers that were actually thinking they're going to plant corn, it was 1%-ish like that.
Joe, were you in Iowa? And I can't come up with this quite right. I was thinking about what Iowa's predicament looks like this year and Illinois looks like this year. Were you in Iowa the year that there was so much rainfall, and not last year, I think?
It was 2008. That's the year I moved back to D.C. from Iowa.
Yeah, so it was 2008, and they had so much rainfall. And can just in your mind, can you compare that year to this year? And what did the Iowa final yield look like that year?
Well, see, in that year, I mean, because, you know, somebody asked me, what about corn yields? Well, the U.S. and then Iowa's in the mix, the top six corn yields have happened in the last 6 years. So, you know, when you say, yeah, it was bad, you know, in that 2008, they had flooding. That's when Cedar Rapids went underwater, if you remember.
Right.
Well, if you were close to any waterway, yeah, it was bad for you. I mean, you had fields underwater and they were gone. But you have to remember that flood, that rain event, that was earlier. That was around the early part of June. Now, there were some people possibly that we saw that reseeded the beans possibly there. Here, we're not seeing that. It's just different this year. You've got a lot of rain, and you've got some ponding. We've heard it. You know, you've got ponding spots there in Illinois as well, but it's not, you know, the same situation as in 08, and that turned out to be a really good year.
Todd, just one observation that might fall in the category of trivia and maybe of not much relevance to the current situation, but we did take a look at June rainfall in Illinois, Indiana, and Iowa and compared it to June rainfall over the past 50 years. This year was the wettest year we've ever had on, if you average the rainfall in those three states. If you look at the previous 5 years of the wettest Junes, in all five of those years, the U.S. average corn yield was below trend value. Whether that will follow this year or not, but I think there is some common perception that you can't get too much rain in June. I think history would suggest that at the levels of rainfall we had this June, we would expect it to have some negative impact on yield. A disaster, no. It's still going to be very high yields, very good yields, but we may be starting out a little bit too high on our yield expectations this year.
Did you actually also figure out what the percentage off of trend line that was?
The biggest drop was in 93, of course, because June rainfall was also followed by July flooding. But the average shortfall from trend value was about 1.5-2 percentage points. So not huge, but I think the interesting part is we were never above trend yield in years when we've had an extremely wet June.
You know, it'll be interesting to see how all that plays out. If you'd like to join our conversation this afternoon, we still have maybe 10 minutes or so to talk with both Joe Persaki of NASS in Washington, D.C., Daryl Good, ag economist here at the University of Illinois. You can do that. The phone numbers to call are 217-333-9455 or 800, that's toll-free, 222-9455. Please do give us a call, 217-333-9455 or 800-222-9455 if you have a question or comment for either of these folks. Joe, what was the number that you saw that surprised you the most that just seemed unbelievable even as a statistician?
Well, I don't know if I don't surprise. I really don't get too surprised in this because I'm seeing numbers and I'm seeing numbers come in. But, you know, the one, we had a group of interns in, and their counselor, their guide, or whatever, you know, they were in for the briefing. They asked, you know, after the briefing, they says, well, what's the biggest thing you think of this? And I said, well, it's got to be corn. I said, because the industry expectations, and you've seen this in the various, different places, well, both the acres and the stocks were well below what the trade was expecting. So, I mean, of course, I mean, and we see the prices. I'm guessing the prices were almost limit or close to it. I didn't look this afternoon, but this morning I know they were.
Indeed, they were. They were, at least for corn, but beans didn't react particularly
well.
Much
and as I told, and it's like I told this group of students, it's like, I said, economics is working here. I said, because the market is expecting beans to be in this range. Well, and that's where we came in. That's where, you know, USDA and NASS, that's where we came in with beans on both stocks. And acres is what the, you know, trade was expecting. And then on the other side, on wheat, the acres and the stocks were much, much higher than what the trade was expecting. So, I mean, so it does work. And the thing that people say is, like, how do you miss things or whatever? Could you miss anything? Well, we use the same procedures. It's the same survey that we collect both the corn, the bean, and the wheat information. It's like, okay, well, how can corn be, you know, different than the other two? Well, this is the numbers. I think this is right. This is where we are.
Joe, stay with us. We'll be back in just a couple minutes. You're listening to The Farming World. Joe Persaki is with us from USDA NASS, as is Daryl Good from the Ag Economist section here at the University of Illinois.
It's National Ice Cream Soda Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1831, the first U.S. patent for a platform scale was issued to the Fairbanks brothers of St. Johnsbury, Vermont. In 1886, the U.S. Division of Forestry was established by an act of Congress. The act also opened up timberland for legitimate uses and established the principles by which federally owned forest land would be reserved for public use. In 1905, the U.S. Division of Forestry moved from the Department of the Interior to USDA. In 1906, the Pure Food and Drug Act and the Meat Inspection Act were passed by Congress. In 1985, James A. Dewar died. He is the creator of the golden sponge cake with a creamy filling, better known as the Twinkie. By the way, Twinkies originally contained banana cream filling, but was replaced with vanilla cream filling during a banana shortage during World War II. And in 1996, Dr. Edward Anton Asselberg is believed to have died. He developed the process for making instant mashed potato flakes, the patent that is still used worldwide today. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
This is the Farming World News and Information from the University of Illinois and Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason in studio with us today. Daryl Good, ag economist from the U of I, on the phone line. Joe Persaki of USDA NAS. Joe, I want to take you through one other set of numbers, or actually a couple of tech numbers, the biotech numbers eventually. But let's start with the acreage figures again. Harvested acres at 81 million this year, at 1.8% bigger than... Let's see, what's that? 1.8% bigger than previous year. And the estimate and the planted was 1.6%. I suppose that only has to do with the rainfall last fall. Is that right?
Yeah, because when we look at, when we do the survey, we get, planted and then we get harvested. And then obviously then we calculate a harvested planted ratio. Then we look at that. And it could be, some years, they're thinking more silage at this time. And then there could have been already incorporating in some planted acres that have already disappeared as well. And so, that's what we're possibly seeing there. But in this case, we're expecting to harvest more, and that's what you're seeing there is because of the conditions last fall.
Okay, and then let's take a look at some of the things, other things that you collect along the way. Biotech varieties and as a percent of all planted acres for corn, soybeans, and upland cotton. Can you go through those numbers?
Yeah. Because on the survey, we've been asking that question about, this biotech. Because it's been an issue, and it's like, well, this year on corn, we came in at 86% of all corn varieties planted were somehow biotech. That could be herbicide resistant, insect resistant, or double stacked or such. And that's up just one percentage point from last year. Where soybeans and upland cotton this year are sitting at 93%. So that's pretty much almost all the acres are biotech on soybeans and cotton. And with the soybeans, that's up 2 percentage points from last year. And then cotton is up, this is 5 percentage points. And we saw quite a bit increase in cotton acres this year as well. So, the new acres, those added acres were pretty much all this biotech, it looks like.
Can you tell me the types and differences here on the biotech? Because you have the stacked genes, 09 and 10, you have herbicide resistant only, and you have insect resistant only. So one doesn't capture the other. Is that right?
They're all separate. Like on soybeans, herbicide resistant. We don't have any. We're not picking up any sort of insect resistant soybeans.
Right
now. So basically, it's glyphosate tolerant soybeans is what that is. And then where corn, the herbicide resistant only, you may have it's only resistant to herbicide, or you may have it only resistant to insects, and then you could have one that's both, which is becoming more common, where it's both, insect-resistant and herbicide-resistant together. That's a stacked gene. Or they have other characteristics in there as well.
Yeah. So I guess my question is, when you show this year, for instance, herbicide-resistant at 22%, at 23%, BT only at 16%, and then stacked at 47%. But the stacked really doesn't include the other two because it could. Well, it must not because you put down all biotech varieties at 86%.
Let's see here. Let me do the math real quick.
Yeah. So I know I'm right.
Okay.
I'm pretty certain that I'm right. It's a matter. But I thought it was pretty interesting that stacked genes accounted in the corn crop this year at
47%.
About half of the crop was a stacked gene crop, and then you had 23% of the crop that was herbicide resistant, Roundup Ready, probably, or Liberty Link, or something along those lines. And then there were some folks, not much, was just BT only crop.
Right.
And so the stacked genes really have made the big push, and I'm wondering whether we'll eventually see that show up in our yield numbers. And Darryl Good might have something to say about that more than anything else. But it's interesting to watch those numbers jump up. How quickly do you think that these numbers jumped up compared to, on the stack gene, that is, compared to moving the soybean crop to Roundup Ready? So the adoption.
Yeah, the corn was quite a bit faster, than on soybeans. Because soybeans, we've been doing this for quite a long time. And corn, we were down, the percentages were quite a bit lower, say, 5 years ago than where we are now. I mean, it's just been the technology change in corn.
Any final word from you before I let you go for the day?
Again, I just, Todd, thanks a lot. Again, I want to thank all the farmers and ranchers and producers out there that took the time to fill out the surveys, either phone, personal interview, or by mail, internet. Because farmers are the ones that give us the best information. They know what's going on with their operation better than anybody else, and I appreciate the time. And I thank Darryl for, providing some insight because he's one of the best.
Thank you so much, Joe. Joe Persaki is with USDA and NASS. Darryl Good, any final word from you before I let you go, too?
I think we've covered everything pretty well today, John.
A lot of it. We've gone through it. Yeah. Darryl Good from the University of Illinois, Ag Economist. You've been listening to The Farming World. It is a production of Illinois Public Media here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. If you'd like to hear this or other agricultural programming, you can always visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. Don't forget to sign up for our free weekend newsletter. And if you do that today, you'll also get the newsletter that was produced that goes along with the USDA reports this morning and links to this particular set of interviews.